This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
By providing a profitable solution to mitigating the CO2 in green building, in concrete, we can induce people all over the world to mitigate their CO2.
Did you know that the production of cement is responsible for 5% of the carbon dioxide emissions on the planet? My guest today on Sea Change Radio is geologist, biomineralization expert, and entrepreneur Brent Constance. His startup company, Blue Planet, hopes to use biomimicry to transform carbon dioxide to a calcium carbonate base that can be used to build, pave, and even roof. Not only would this innovative process reduce the use of fossil fuels involved in the production of conventional cement and concrete, according to Constance, the process is so scalable, it could fundamentally transform how we approach coal emissions. Mineralization that mimics the mastery of a lobster shedding and growing a new shell is at the heart of this technology, which has the dual utility of carbon sequestration and building material as sustainable as it is durable. Blue Planet Concrete's not the first innovation to be inspired by nature, but it may be the first to apply the biochemistry of sea creatures like lobsters and corals to carbon capture. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Brent Constance. He's the founder of Blue Planet. Brent, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
It's great to be here.
So Blue Planet is a new way of looking at concrete. Why do we need to look at concrete in a new way, though?
Concrete is the most traded material other than water in the whole world. So any venue you go anywhere in the world today, almost, concrete is the principal construction material. It makes up more than half the building materials of all buildings. And as you know, buildings themselves are the largest user of power, as well as the largest carbon footprint and embodied energy that we have. So when we look at buildings, for example, mostly over the last few decades, we've looked primarily at their efficiency, meaning cooling, heating, lighting, etc. But now that we're becoming much more efficient, the actual embodied energy in any building or road, anything we construct, is turning out to be the largest carbon footprint of anything we build, and not its operating history. In fact, there's a movement, Architecture 2030, to bring all buildings to zero net energy by 2030, which we're making great progress on. But at that time, we'll still have the embodied energy of all the materials used to build the building. And it turns out with concrete, which is the principal building material in most buildings, that's where the largest carbon footprint is. It's not in the carpet fibers or anything else. It's in the concrete.
And people would be surprised to hear that, I think. What goes into the concrete process that is so carbon intensive?
Well, about 10 or 15% of the mass of a yard of concrete is Portland cement, which is the binder that binds together all the sand and gravel in the cement. And the way you make Portland cement is you locate a cement plant near a limestone quarry, you quarry the limestone, and then you burn coal or some other fossil fuel, usually to heat the limestone or calcine it up to very high temperatures. And what happens at that temperature is for every ton of Portland cement you make, you put off about a ton of carbon dioxide. So the reason that's significant is there's over 15 billion tons of concrete poured every year worldwide, and there's almost 4 billion tons of Portland cement used in that concrete. Furthermore, the sand and gravel put in the concrete is often transported great distances in order to get it to the ready-mix plant where the concrete is formulated.
And it's obviously very heavy in that takes carbon as well to transport.
Correct. For example, here in Northern California, a lot of our aggregate, we call it, comes from British Columbia on barges. And understandably, from an environmental perspective, it's harder and harder to permit rock quarries because rock quarries are what takes mountaintops off. Almost all quarrying of rock is open pit. And remarkably, there's over 35 billion tons of rock mined for the purpose of aggregate every year worldwide. And just to put that in perspective, there's about 5 billion tons of coal mined. And most coal is mined in shafts. So, but we focus primarily on coal mining, but it's actually really rock mining that's destroying the environment. And so there's both a need to address the mining of rock, as well as address the carbon footprint that's coming from Portland cement, which is the cementing component of the concrete.
So Blue Planet, what is the big idea behind it?
Well, with Blue Planet, not only are we making the constituents of concrete, other than by forming Portland cement through mining limestone and burning it, or aggregate through mining it in open pit quarries, but our fundamental raw material for all our materials is carbon dioxide. From many perspectives, Blue Planet is viewed as a carbon capture company. That is, a company with the ability to go out and capture carbon dioxide. But we're not capturing it from the atmosphere, for example. We're capturing it at large point source emitters of carbon dioxide, meaning coal-fired power plants, natural gas-fired power plants, cement plants, and other industrial plants, like ethanol refineries, for example. These are places where most of the carbon dioxide, all the anthropogenic carbon dioxide, is coming from. The other half is coming largely from transportation. So we call these point source emitters, places where you can go and capture large amounts of carbon dioxide. And just to put that in perspective, we believe humans are putting about 40 billion tons of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere every year. And about half of that is coming from these point source emitters. And the largest single one is coal-fired power plants. And now China is the largest emitter of any of the countries in the world. And so it's really the coal-fired power plants in China that are the number one producer of carbon dioxide in the whole world. But there are also natural gas plants and cement plants, as I mentioned. To make our materials, we require large quantities of carbon dioxide. In fact, for every ton of carbon dioxide we take in, we make a little more than a ton of our material. There's a need to actually capture carbon dioxide actively. That is, we've made enormous strides in energy efficiency, for example. And, you know, as Steve Chu said, the former Secretary of Energy, that's where our biggest strides are going to be. And we've done a really pretty good job over the last few decades. And, you know, everything from lighting to air conditioning to heating to insulation, there's been enormous strides in improving the energy efficiency of buildings. We've also made enormous strides in changing from fossil energy to renewable energy and wind and solar in particular. But there's other renewables like tidal current generation that are being looked at. Even the cold of the ocean is being used to augment air conditioning, which is a large part of the amount of electricity used. And there have been strides with the short-lived climate pollutants as well, incredible strides. I think there's over 80 short-lived climate pollutants that have been significantly mitigated. And China has even signed up on the Montreal Protocol for that now. But even with all of that, if we do not actively capture the carbon dioxide coming from fossil fuel power generation and cement plants, we still lose the battle. We cross the 2-degree change and everything begins to change. So, in fact, if we were to do none of the other great advances that I just mentioned, but only tackle coal-fired power plants and be able to tackle the carbon emissions from the coal-fired power plants, we would be okay. But if we do all those other things that we've been doing so well and we don't address coal-fired power plants, we won't be okay. We lose the battle. And that's been shown over and over again by many different climate scientists. So it's recognized we absolutely have to capture carbon dioxide. And this is driving the recent EPA regulation 111D, which is coming through, which will require all the states to come up with their own plan to mitigate carbon dioxide and regulate it as a pollutant, similar to what California is attempting to do right now. What Blue Planet is doing is we have the ability to go out to a large carbon emitter, capture the carbon dioxide, and turn it into carbonate minerals, which are the constituents of limestone, which get used in concrete, sequestering the carbon dioxide in the concrete. And that has a couple of effects. First of all, it sequesters the carbon dioxide in the concrete that would have gone into the atmosphere, which is a huge plus. So you can take a large coal-fired plant that may be putting 10 million tons of CO2 into the atmosphere every year and mitigate that 10 million tons. But the other effect it has, to the extent that it's replacing the aggregate and the cement and the concrete, it's offsetting the need for that aggregate being transported in from British Columbia or wherever, you know, long distances. And if it's replacing cement or lowering the amount of cement needed, it's also lowering the carbon footprint of the concrete that would have come from the cement. So it has a twofold benefit. And of course, we all wish coal would just go away, and we all wish fossil fuel would just go away. It's not a renewable resource. But we also have to be realistic that that's where half of all the power is coming from now. And even if we go renewable as fast as we possibly can, it's still going to be a significant part of our power. And in China and India, where the real problem is, it'll be their main source of power for many decades to come. And if we don't do something proactively, we will lose the battle.
Change Radio is made possible by support from Presidio Graduate School in San Francisco, offering MBA and MPA degrees in sustainable management. Learn more at presidio.edu. This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to geologist and entrepreneur Brent Constance. So when you mention carbon capture, many listeners immediately think, well, that's like carbon capture sequestration or CCS, which most people believe is not a realistic solution to address our coal usage. Your technology is obviously quite different, but do you share their skepticism regarding CCS?
Yeah. Well, even if it were technically feasible, you know, and that's a whole area where there are a lot of experts which disagree on a number of things, but even if it were technically feasible, it's just not economically feasible. And, you know, the whole idea that we're going to capture all of the pollutants, you know, comes from the earliest theories of environmental law that a polluter will pay and all of this. And when you look at how the Clean Air Act handled sulfur dioxide in the Northeast, for example, it's a huge success. And the Clean Air Act worked perfectly there. The problem with CO2 is there's so much of it. You know, the levels of sulfur dioxide and flue gas is sort of in the couple thousand parts per million range, right? For the amount of CO2 in flue gas, it's sort of the 100 to 150,000 parts per million, you know. So it's not even comparable. And the idea that you're going to tax it or, you know, regulate it by that mechanism, just it won't pencil out. For example, if the Chinese want $100 a ton from the West to mitigate their CO2, and we need them to mitigate 10 billion tons, it's $1 trillion a year. You know, there isn't money to do that. But if they're turning into concrete, which they're using and buying anyway, and it's actually not even a strain on them, it's actually a profit center, everything changes. And it has to be something that can be commercialized today, which we can do with concrete, and it has to be something that can be implemented today, you know, which we can with Blue Planet's technology. What's remarkable about what Blue Planet's doing is also that even though we've invented these processes, we're using constituents that are available commercially at scale from many vendors today that are assembled. So we don't have some new manufacturing process for some critical new technology that's going to take years of development.
So On a granular level, no pun intended, walk us through the proposed production process from plant to pouring.
Sure. The capture process is done with a capture medium, which is generated by Blue Planet's proprietary membrane generation process, which is a second generation process. When I built the first generation of carbon sequestration in 2008 and 2009.
That was a company called Calera.
Calera. Yeah. We used an electrochemical process to generate a chemical quantity called alkalinity. It gives you the ability to neutralize an acid gas, which carbon dioxide is. And when you react carbon dioxide with water, you get carbonic acid, and you require 2 moles of what's called alkalinity to turn that to carbonate, to form a carbonate mineral. Blue Planet has a revolutionary breakthrough that allows us to generate this alkalinity at a very low cost and a low capital investment, which is critical to scaling this up. So we generate an alkaline capture solution. This is contacted with the flue gas, and the flue gas from a coal plant is about 12 to 15% carbon dioxide, and the rest is mainly air, you know, nitrogen. And so we have the ability to capture up to 80% of the carbon dioxide passing through it in seconds. That forms a solution called a liquid condensed phase of bicarbonate. And this was discovered by one of our PhDs in his dissertation. And it was so significant, it was the topic of a Faraday discussion even before he turned in his dissertation. But it's a new discovery of a, if you will, a microemulsion of bicarbonate, which we can manipulate. And it turns out it's used in common biomineralization processes by lobsters and clams and everything. It's a fundamental breakthrough. But with the liquid condensed phase, we actually grow the carbonate minerals directly, which is also a huge advance. When I did the first generation, we had to go through very capital and energy intensive processes to dry the mineral that was formed and turn it into useful products. Here we actually grow them through a direct mineralization process, which is a huge breakthrough that is represented at Blue Planet.
When we're talking about coal power plants and adapting the Blue Planet system for this capturing, could it work for all coal power plants, or do they have to have a certain modernity to them?
Well, so we talk about retrofitting coal plants, and then we talk about greenfield. You know, if you go somewhere like China, there are a lot of new coal plants being built and older ones, smaller ones being retired. If you talk about most of the rest of the world, there are not a lot of new coal plants, and they're primarily retrofit opportunities. Either way, we need to mitigate the carbon dioxide coming from all of these plants. One of the problems, and there are many problems, almost overwhelming, but one of the problems is this generation of coal plants that have less than 10 years of life, or maybe less than 15 years of life left. Because even though they're the dirtiest plants, they're still operating, and we need to get out there quickly and mitigate the carbon dioxide. However, because of the short life term they have, there's not a great incentive to invest a large amount of money into mitigation, because it can only be amortized over 10 or 15 years. You know, whereas if you went to a new plant or a newer plant, you know, that's got 30 or 40 years, your investment would be much better. And so this is one of the big problems, is these older coal plants waiting to get retired that may slip under the radar screen, but are actually significantly putting out large amounts of carbon dioxide. So in a retrofit situation like that, we have the advantage, because of our membrane-based technology, which is modular in nature, we can actually go out in rail cars, barges, containers, get in there quickly without having to build a large shovel in the ground operation with years of permits and construction, but actually get in with a modular system.
As opposed to carbon sequestration, where we're just like burying it in the ground. Why not turn it into a good?
Right. And that's where concrete comes in, because we recognize at Blue Planet that concrete is the most traded material other than water in the world. And if you take all the coal-fired power plants and the natural gas-fired power plants and the cement plants, you know, you're talking between 15 and 20 billion tons of carbon dioxide that are being put out year after year, and it's growing. It's not getting less. And humans are pouring between 15 and 20 billion tons of concrete every year. And they will be year after year after year. And that's increasing as well on a worldwide basis as infrastructure and roads develop. So you need a reservoir that not only can take that much CO2, which concrete can on an ongoing basis and is all over the world, but for which there's money to pay for it. And there's money to pay for concrete. When we go to the gas pump and we pay whatever it is, 8 cents or something, federal gasoline tax per gallon, for our gasoline in the car, that money goes to the Department of Transportation in Washington. And they dole it back out to the states. Like, for example, Caltrans here in California, our Department of Transportation gets over $10 billion a year from the federal DOT. It's very critical that the money is there to buy this and pay for it. Because even though we may develop carbon laws here in North America and in Europe, that work, we need to think about the rest of the world, and especially Asia. And by providing a profitable solution to mitigating the CO2 in green building, in concrete, we can induce people all over the world to mitigate their CO2.
Everybody knows I'm stuck on my baby. Kissing me dizzy, hugging and loving, sweet on my baby for sure. Tall grass grows, there ain't no maybe. Digging and grooving, moving real slow, sweet on my baby for sure. She love me all good, grain or shine, just like a diamond in a silver mine. Hello everybody, I'm sweet on my baby. I don't gotta tell, you already know, I'm stuck on my baby for sure.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Brent Constance. He's a geologist and the founder of Blue Planet. So Blue Planet's technology is somewhat related to marine crustaceans. What inspired this, and how is it relevant?
Well, it's fascinating science. It turns out this is the fundamental sort of process that we believe is used, say, when a lobster grows. You know, the way a lobster grows is it has an exoskeleton and it jettisons its whole skeleton, and then it has a new unmineralized skeleton inside, which then expands
from calcium carbonate,
and it's of the same material, calcium carbonate, correct? And they'd already absorbed all the calcium before they jettisoned their old skeleton. They do this in hours. It's amazing because they can't sit out in nature unprotected.
Why it's so hard to find a nice soft shell lobster.
Exactly, yeah. And, you know, it's always been curious in our field, well, how do they do this in a few hours, you know? Well, now we know. And the fundamental terms we're using are these liquid condensed phase droplets form. And then when calcium becomes available, we call them pre-nucleation clusters. And these clusters are actually responsible for the growth of the mineral. And so we're able to do direct mineralization and growth of the materials that are used in concrete, like the sand and the aggregate, and we can even make cement itself. And I should say I have over 100 issued patents on cement, so it's an area I know a fair amount about from my background in bone cements. Well, the Blue Planet, once the liquid droplets of the liquid condensed phase of bicarbonate are introduced to calcium, they begin to mineralize. And it would be akin to what we all know as scaling of our pipes. You know how calcium scales your pipe. It would be akin to that kind of reaction. You may have heard the term biomimetic, which describes mimicking biological processes. We call this geomimetic because it's mimicking a modern geologic process of sand formation. And we take the liquid condensed phase and introduce hardness in the form of water-bearing calcium to it, and we form these sands in place, which are useful for sands and concrete as well as aggregates. I'm on, you know, committees with the American Concrete Institute, and we're following all the specifications necessary to meet, to make the proper kind of concrete. And we can have a huge impact on the carbon footprint of a yard of concrete that's used.
Walk us through some of the ways Blue Planet concrete would be used beyond what's most commonly used in the industry today, Brent.
There are a variety of uses. There's what we call precast concrete, which would be blocks and pavers and other structural members of concrete, as well as ready-mix concrete. There's even the retail use of concrete where it's sold in bags at Home Depot and Lowe's around the world. In fact, there are countries like Indonesia or Mexico where most of the concrete actually comes from bags poured on site, even in large industrial projects, because you can't really get a ready-mix truck out to the site. What's significant about forming the materials, which are heavy materials, close to where the power plants are, is the power plants are close to where the people are. And so instead of mining at distant locations and transporting these heavy materials long distances to a concrete plant close to a population area, you're actually forming the materials close to the plant, because often in a lot of industrial infrastructure, concrete ready mix plants, power plants, and other infrastructure along the same shipping, rail, barging, trucking routes, and they're highly concentrated. So it's a way, it would be akin to growing vegetables locally and eating them locally instead of shipping them long distances. But now you multiply the carbon footprint times, you know, 100,000, because the heavy density of these materials is much more than, say, a head of lettuce.
Now, you've mentioned, Brent, how Blue Planet's concrete would have biomimetic properties. Where would that come into the picture in terms of lowering global carbon emissions?
It's called cool roofing, and it's a very interesting field. By increasing the albedo of roofing, you can dramatically lower the energy usage in a building. And what's unique about what we're doing is our material itself, our sands, have a higher solar reflectance than a material called titanium dioxide, which is made by DuPont Chemical, for example, and has the highest reflectance of almost any material that's known. It's a white pigment. And ours is higher than that. And what we can do is we can also make it colors. So unless you live in Santorini, you really don't want a white roof. You want every, you know, earth tone color of the palette. And of course, this is what shells do. You know, if you're in the tropics in midday at low tide and you look out on a coral reef, you'll see large shells sitting out there in the sun, even though you have your SPF 90 sunscreen on and you're boiling. These cold-blooded mollusks are doing fine, you know, and if you think about it, that's pretty unusual. Well, it turns out there's this fundamental crystallographic property in biominerals that are used in this way, both in their color and in their fundamental crystal structure, that allows them to have very high solar reflectance all the way from ultraviolet into the infrared range. And so it's very interesting. We've mimicked that, and we're making cool roofing. It's another way to fight climate change.
He's a geologist and the founder of Blue Planet, Brent Constance. Brent, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thanks, Alex. It was great being here.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Cornell Dupree, Bob Marley and the Wailers, and Anders Osborne. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.